You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
And greetings, my friends, patriots, lovers of democracy, truth, and justice, believers in peace, freedom, and the American way. The gloves are off. You know, for the last couple of years, people have been calling into this program and saying, these Republicans are fascists. And I've said, I wouldn't use that word because it reminds, causes people to think of the Nazis. And they're not using words like communist to describe us. Until day before yesterday. Congressman Alan West was doing a town hall meeting down in his district in Florida. And he came out and he said, it's my understanding that there's about 80 members of Congress who are communists. Or words to that effect. When he was asked to clarify, he pointed to the Progressive Caucus, the House Progressive Caucus, which has 83 members. Here's a message for Congressman Alan West. There are no communists in Congress, but there are a heck of a lot of fascists, including yourself. This week, Republican freshman Representative Alan West from Florida described the Congressional Progressive Caucus, it's 83 members, as communists. They recently introduced the Budget for All, essentially their blueprint for the future of America. Congressman West thinks the Budget for All might as well be renamed the Communist Manifesto. So what exactly is in this budget that has this right-winger, Alan West, so hysterical? Well, there's a $2.9 trillion investment in rebuilding our infrastructure, road, rail, sewers, water, bridges. So if that makes you a communist, then President Dwight Eisenhower, who invested massive amounts of government money to build the interstate highway system and reboot the American economy after World War II and dig us out of the biggest debt this country has ever had, he must have been a card-carrying member of the Communist Party. How could Joe McCarthy have missed him? Actually, maybe he didn't. I'll bet McCarthy was muttering about Eisenhower under his breath constantly. Anyhow, the Progressive Caucus's budget also ends the Bush tax cuts for the top 2% wealthiest Americans. And it proposes new tax brackets for millionaires and billionaires, having them pay a top tax rate of 49%, which is still well below what the super rich paid under the administrations of Roosevelt, Truman, Eisenhower, Kennedy, Johnson, Nixon, Ford, Carter, and even the beginning of the Reagan administration. Were those guys communists? Not only that, a big majority of the American people support taxing the rich at a higher rate. Overwhelmingly, Americans favor this proposal. So most Americans are communists, Congressman West? The progressive budget also creates a public option, gives Americans an alternative to the for-profit private health insurance industry. Quinnipiac did a poll back in 2009 at the height of all the sturm and drang and the hysteria around the health care reform, and they found that Americans by a 2-to-1 margin support the public option, 61% to 34%. Are they communists too? The majority of Americans? Oh, and the progressive budget, it ends our wars. Last time I checked, a distaste for war is not a central tenet of the Communist Party. So it would be probably useful. Somebody probably ought to inform Congressman West what a communist really is. According to Karl Marx himself, as he wrote in the Communist Manifesto, which he co-authored with Friedrich Engels, the theory of the communists, quoting Marx, the theory of the communists may be summed up in a single sentence, abolition of private property, end of quote. Encyclopedia Britannica says, quote, the political and economic doctrine that aims to replace private property and a profit-based economy with public ownership and communal control of at least the major means of production, mines, mills, and factories, and the natural resources of a society is communism. So under this definition, there is no private business, there is no profit, there is no free market. That means Walmart, IBM, ExxonMobil, GE, you name the company, even this small business which produces this show would cease to exist under communism. I haven't heard one person in Congress or even any progressive talk show hosts call for the elimination of private business or private property. Not one. There is a communist party in the United States. It's moderated itself somewhat from Marxist communism, but they don't have any, even at that, they don't have a single representative in Congress. There are no communists in power in America, Congressman West. The genuine extreme left has no political power. But the communists' counterpoint, the extreme right, the other side of that spectrum, what we've historically called fascists, and you got communists on one end, fascists on the other, they do have political power. In fact, right now, the fascists have control of the House of Representatives, and they just passed a fascist budget for America that got the vote of nearly every single Republican member of the House and not one single Democrat. According to the American Heritage Dictionary, fascism is, quote, a system of government that exercises a dictatorship of the extreme right, typically through the merging of state and business leadership together with belligerent nationalism, end of quote. So belligerent nationalism, you got Mitt Romney out there running around saying, oh, Barack Obama doesn't believe in American exceptionalism. Exceptionalism is code for belligerent nationalism. And then the merging of corporate and state. In 1938, Italy's Benito Mussolini brought fascism to the world by dissolving his parliament and replacing it with the Camera dei Fasci e delle Corporazioni, the Chamber of the Fascist Corporations. It was their parliament. System of government in which corporate leaders from all across Italy were chosen to represent their communities and government instead of elected officials. It was not a government of, by, and for we the people. Instead, it was a government of, by, and for the most powerful corporate interests, the billionaires of the nation and their companies. What was going on in Italy at that time so freaked out President Roosevelt's vice president, Henry Wallace, that Vice President Henry Wallace wrote an article in the New York Times in 1944 warning you and me, future generations, of what fascism would be like if it came to America. Wallace wrote, if we define an American fascist as one who, in case of conflict, puts money and power ahead of human beings, and there are undoubtedly several million fascists in the United States, there are probably several hundred thousand if we narrow the definition to include those who, in their search for money and power, are ruthless and deceitful, end quote. He went on to say, American fascists pay, quote, paid lip service to democracy and the common welfare, but in their insatiable greed for money and the power which money gives, do not hesitate surreptitiously to evade the laws designed to safeguard the public from, get this, monopolistic extortion. End of quote. From the Vice President of the United States. Looking at the Republican budget and the Republican embrace of corporate corruption in our government, most Republican members of Congress pretty neatly fit Wallace's definition of a fascist. In the search for more and more money and power, Paul Ryan and the Republican fascists passed a budget that gives a $3 trillion tax cut to the wealthiest Americans and the big transnational corporations. In the search for more and more money, the Paul Ryan budget strips away laws to safeguard the public and keep our air, water, and food clean so that corporations can maximize their profits while we all choke. The Paul Ryan budget ends Medicare as we know it, cuts a huge chunk out of Medicaid, weakening the role of government to provide health insurance and instead giving for-profit health insurance companies absolute control of the healthcare market in America. In his 1944 Times article, Wallace also pointed out this little tactic of the fascists. He said, always and everywhere they can be identified by their appeal to prejudice and by the desire to play upon the fears and vanities of different groups in order to gain power. It is no coincidence that the growth of modern tyrants has, in every case, been heralded by the growth of prejudice. End of quote from the Vice President of the United States. Prejudice. Have we seen something like this played out in the right-wing coverage of the Trayvon Martin killing, for example? Or Matt Drudge a couple of days ago, a picture of President Obama being passionate, looking like an angry black guy. Right up at the top.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
Yes, be afraid, be very afraid. This is the strategy of fascism. Is it coming to America? Really?
It's not a lie if you believe it.
I'm just an old truth teller. I'm your candid friend.
Defending America from the weapons of mass deception. Welcome back, Tom Hartman, with you. So Henry Wallace, the Vice President of the United States, comes out and says, one of the typical tactics of the fascists is to use prejudice to split people. So is it just a coincidence that the same Republicans who are supporting this fascistic Paul Ryan budget are also promoting prejudice against women, gays, and minorities and standing in the way of equal access to health care, to marriage, and to economic opportunity? I mean, look at what happened in Wisconsin last week. Scott Walker signing a law into being that does away with the laws that protected women in the workplace in terms of pay. Not only that, there's enormous support on the right for the Supreme Court's Citizens United decision, which gave corporations unlimited power over our politics, basically allowing them to run their own corporate candidates anywhere from a local election to a state election to president of the United States. In fact, you could argue that the Supreme Court here did what Mussolini did in Italy in 1934, only under a different name. There's also enormous support on the hard right for groups like the American Legislative Exchange Council, ALEC, which, taking a page from Mussolini's Chamber of Fascist Corporations, gives corporate lobbyists an equal vote with mostly Republican state lawmakers to pass corporate-friendly legislation all around the country. This is the definition of rule by corporations, which is the dictionary definition of fascism. And it's also the agenda being pushed by today's Republican Party. And guess who enthusiastically supported and voted for Paul Ryan's fascistic budget and plays on prejudices and routinely puts the interests of corporations ahead of his constituents? Congressman Alan West. The guy who says that there's more than 80 communists in the House of Representatives. There's something really fundamentally unbalanced about an America, in general, about the American political system. When people like Congressman West are calling moderate policies, which are endorsed by the majority of Americans, like investing in America's infrastructure and having the very wealthy pay their fair share of taxes and ending our wars, when he calls that communist. These policies have historically been embraced by Republicans, by Democrats, by presidents, by lawmakers, and, you know, for the history of the United States, I say, by the majority of the American people. The influence of the real far left, the communist. We had a guy on from the Communist Party of the USA here on this program, what, 2 years ago, 3 years ago? I said, so how's that going? You know, where all private property is dissolved, the government owns everything. Well, not so well. How many members do you have? Well, maybe 300, I don't know. Communists have disappeared. That's the far left. What do I think I am? This is the middle. We're the middle. And then you got the right, which says, maybe we should have, corporations more involved. Take it back down, in the other direction. We should have corporations more involved and things like that, but then of course you got the far right, the fascists and the libertarians who want virtually no government at all, and that bunch has just exploded. So you've got the uber rich and the corporations running the House of Representatives, where a majority of the Republicans are multimillionaires, and they're even running their own guy for president in quarter billionaire Mitt Romney. Vice President Henry Wallace concluded in 1944, "We must not tolerate oppressive government or industrial oligarchy in the form of, listen carefully, monopolies and cartels." End of quote. If Republicans like Alan West want to call people who support Pell Grants for college students communists, then as much as I, over the years, have said, well, you know, we probably shouldn't call these guys fascists, let's start being brutally honest about him and his Republican policies. As former Vice President of the United States, Henry Wallace, pointed out repeatedly, they're fascists. There's no other way to say it. The people who, this is the textbook definition of fascism, is merging corporate and state interests. It is literally the textbook definition of fascism. I look around the world. Look at those countries where the corporations basically run the governments. Do we really want to be like that? Do we really want to be living in a country where the interests of big business are put above the interests of the people? where you have bloated militaries, or you have basically have to, you know, buy things. I remember years ago, this was 15, 20 years ago, I was in Bogota, Colombia. And at that time, and I don't think so much anymore, but at that time, there were literally hunt clubs of men who would go out with rifles at night and hunt street children. They called them los camines, the little animals. Take trophy pictures. And I remember one just so vividly. We were driving down the street, and here's this giant billboard. And the billboard was a picture of a woman and a child with a swing set in the backyard of a house, happily playing, and in front of, in the picture on the billboard, and in front of that house, or not in front, this is the backyard, wrapped around that house was a 12-foot tall chain link fence topped with razor wire, and standing in front of that, like closest to the camera, as it were, in this photo, it was actually a painting, but in this photo of this image for this billboard, was a guy in a uniform holding a submachine gun. And there was some text on the billboard, and I asked the guy who was driving us what the text said. And he said, oh, they're promoting a new community, new neighborhood. It comes complete with razor wire and armed guards. Is that the kind of country we want? I mean, this is, you know, people who appeal to prejudice, people who promote laws that say that, you know, shoot first. George Zimmerman has a new lawyer. I want to share some of his thoughts with you right after this, and then we'll pick up your calls.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Call 866-987-THOM.
And FDR had some thoughts on taxes. I want to share that with you, too. We've got a packed day. Stick around. Talk media for the sane among us. Welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you, occupying the airwaves 3 hours a day, 5 days a week, on behalf of we the people. This is fascinating. George Zimmerman has a new lawyer. And his new lawyer has had a few things to say to the press a couple of weeks ago. Here is an interview after we're finished playing these. I will get for you his name and where these interviews came from. I'm sorry I don't have those. Here is the Zimmerman's new lawyer, clip number 12, please.
Can you confront someone, shoot them, and get away with that?
Well, under certain circumstances, with our laws the way they are today, the answer would be yes.
Yes, yes, you can shoot someone. And in fact, he extended this somewhat. Here is Zimmerman's new lawyer, clip 13.
With this law on the books, it sounds like people have a license to kill.
Other people call it the license to murder statute because it doesn't require actions to avoid the confrontation.
So Mark O'Mara, Zimmerman's new lawyer, saying this, it's the license to murder. Now, this, keep in mind, this was a couple of weeks ago. He's now Zimmerman's lawyer. He also pointed out that these new stand your ground, shoot first laws change the equation about what is justifiable homicide. It used to be you had to prove that you did everything you could to avoid killing the other person. Not so much anymore, thanks to the Koch brothers, Alec, sponsors is not the right word, delivered legislation. Written by the NRA and Walmart and others on this committee. Here is Zimmerman's new lawyer, Mark O'Mara, from a few weeks ago.
If you can present evidence, or at least your own testimony, that I felt in fear that he was going to commit great bodily injury or death, that is what kicks in the statutory protection that you're allowed to respond with deadly force.
Amazing, right? Okay, Bethany in Chicago. Hey, Bethany, what's up? Oh, no Bethany. She vanished. Jeff in Charleston, West Virginia. Hey, Jeff, what's on your mind today?
Well, first off, love your show, love your topics, love your ideas. you're talking about fascism got me thinking to a Sinclair Lewis quote.
Mm-hmm.
It really made me start thinking about this a while back with Santorum and the far right. But his quote goes something like, it's not right in front of me right now, but it goes something like, fascism will come to the United States. Fascism will come to the United States grasping across and wrapped in the American flag.
Right, and wearing a coonskin cap, as I recall. Yeah. He said, you know, when fascism comes to the United States, it will it'll be carrying a cross and. It's an excellent one. In fact, I wish I had that quote in front of me so I could give it verbatim, too, but you're absolutely right. Very well. Thank you very much. I appreciate it. Anne, or is it Anna, in Lakewood, Colorado?
It's Anna.
Anna, welcome to the program.
Yesterday I was at my computer and also listening to you on Free Speech TV, and I got a call from Wayne LaPierre from NRA?
Yes. Yeah, he's the head of the NRA.
Yeah, and it was a robocall, and he was telling me that Europe, well, all of the world countries are preparing to take away the United States citizens' rights to carry guns.
Oh, really?
And that we all need to get together and make sure that this travesty doesn't take place. And I'd been sitting there wondering what they were going to do when they had to face the news about Trayvon Martin and these other problems.
Yeah.
And there it is.
Yeah. So what he's basically saying is be afraid, be very afraid, and you better buy mm-hmm. some guns because they're going to come and try and mm-hmm. take over this country, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera.
And they said an 800 number that I could have called, but I didn't have a pencil in my hand.
Yeah.
So I called back the number that the call came from, but it just has a bleep sound.
Yeah, it was just a computer.
Anyway, I think everyone needs to be aware they're going to start calling.
Yeah. Anna, thanks for the heads up on that. I appreciate it. And thanks for the call, and thanks for watching Free Speech TV. Scott in Baltimore, Maryland. Hey, Scott, what's up?
Hey, Tom, how are you?
Fine. Says you disagree with me. What's your disagreement?
A couple things. You say that fascism is rightist. And,
fascism is what? Your voice broke up.
Is rightist.
Rightist. Yes.
Rightist. As in right wing.
Right. That's how Mussolini described himself.
I understand that, but if you have a man who takes over a business with government...
No, it's not. That's not how fascism works. It's the other way around. Business takes over government.
The business took over Mussolini. The businesses took over Hitler. They took over Lenin. They took over Mao. Is that how it works?
No, that's if you're really confused about history. Mao eliminated all businesses. Stalin eliminated all businesses. Hitler got into bed with a number of businesses, but then started betraying them. He wasn't a genuine fascist. He was a cult leader. And Mussolini let the businesses run the show. And the way it worked under Mussolini and Franco in Spain, I understand, although I can't speak with as much authority. But the way it worked under Mussolini after 1934 was that every congressional district or the equivalent thereof in Italy, instead of electing a member of parliament, the largest corporation in that district would send its lobbyist or its front person to sit in the chamber, in the parliament chamber, and then they would collectively decide what the laws of the country were. So this is fascism, and typically what is defined as right is things that give power and authority to those who are wealthy and powerful, and what is defined as left is typically those kind of philosophies that take away power and money from those who are wealthy and powerful and give it to the individuals.
Look, there's only been one society that's given power truly to the people. That is the American America that we used to know. Every socialist country has a very low standard of living for the people. It is the socialist who sits high on the hog.
Scott, you are displaying an embarrassing ignorance of the rest of the world. I really strongly recommend that you get a passport first, and I'm guessing you don't have one, and that you know, there are some fairly cheap vacation trips you can take to Europe. Go spend some time in Sweden or Norway or Denmark or Germany or France or the countries that are working really, really well. And just ask them, how's your standard of living? Denmark, they just rated the happiest countries in the world. We didn't even make the top 10. Number one was Denmark. I would strongly suggest that you start there. Chris in Amherst, Massachusetts, listening to WHMP. Hey, Chris, what's up?
Hey, hi, Tom. Yeah, in my opinion, a Republican is just another name for a libertarian, which is just another name for an anarchist, which is just another name for chaos.
Well, it's moved in that direction. I mean, it didn't used to be. When my dad was a Republican, they were all about conservative meant let's just keep things on an even keel. Dwight Eisenhower was considered a conservative because he maintained the top 91% tax bracket.
Right, right. Well, just, one other quick thing. In terms of the Republican meme of, no regulation or no redress of wrongs done to people, the whole thing about, tort reform and everything.
Right.
Well, guess who else likes this philosophy? The mafia and criminals. They love no regulations.
Yes.
They love no redress of, wrongs done to people.
Yeah.
So, in terms of the fascism, that'll be part of it.
Excellent, excellent point. And in fact, I remember years ago there was a 60 Minutes special. This was back when 60 Minutes actually did investigative reporting and bashed corporations. Thanks a lot, Chris, for the call. And this went after the mob or mobbed up waste disposal companies. They discovered that there were these cancer clusters in New England, in rural New England. And what they found was that the poisonous waste products, industrial waste products that contained, cancer causing chemicals that were liquids that were oil soluble were being sprayed on the dirt roads to keep the dust down as if it was just oil, because they oil those roads to keep the dust down. But it was actually toxic waste. And incredible. Charles in Denver, Colorado. Hey, Charles, got about a minute here. What's up?
Well, this won't take long, Tom. In Indiana, they just passed the new castle law, which states that if the homeowner or the person who's living there thinks the police are entering their residence illegally or improperly, they have the right to shoot first and ask questions later. This was just signed by their governor.
Right.
I don't know if it was late last week or early this week.
Yeah, and what's so amazing about all these laws, Charles, is that the police right across the board oppose them.
Oh, yeah. Every major police chief in Indiana was telling the governor, don't sign this. This is going to end up killing officers. And
right.
He signed it anyway and says how it's going to save police officers' lives.
Yeah. Well, this is the same Republican Party that undid Bill Clinton's let's hire 100,000 extra cops for the country. This is the same Republican Party that is cutting funding to police officers, teachers, and firefighters all across the nation.
Oh, yeah. Now we're all bottom feeders. And, I did see one last thing. You might like to see this one here. I saw it on the back of a truck. It's a good bumper sticker idea. Newt, 1912.
Or 1812. Charles, thanks a lot for the call. There you go. 45 minutes past the hour. It's the Tom Hartman program. What defines fascism? And is it time to start calling Republicans, or at least most of them, maybe not Olympia Snow, but calling them fascists?
You're listening to the Tom Hartman program. Visit TomHartman.com for audio and video archives.
Especially when they're calling Democrats communists. Or maybe we should just walk away from the whole rhetorical thing.
Don't tell all you fascists, you may be surprised. People in this world are getting organized. You're bound to lose. You fascists are bound to lose.
Welcome back, Tom Hartman here with you. 9.5 minutes before the hour. Holly in Union, Maine. Hey, Holly, what's up?
Good afternoon, Tom. I love your show.
Thank you.
The ladies that called in a few minutes ago about the NRA robocall.
Right, and she was in Colorado, as I recall.
Yeah, I got one here about a week ago.
Really?
And they indicated that the quote-unquote legislation was working its way through the United Nations Security Council in New York City.
Amazing. That's absolutely incredible because...
And I was wishing that I had a way. I was wishing that the only reason I listened to the whole thing is, one, finally he got my attention, and the other is I was hoping somebody would come on so I could call him a bold-faced liar.
Yeah, well, you know, the fact of the matter is that lots and lots and lots of laws get introduced to lots and lots and lots of legislatures that never have a chance of seeing the light of day. And it wouldn't surprise me at all if, you know, some obscure country someplace has proposed to the UN that there should be no more manufacturing of guns or something like that. You know, it's not inconceivable that there's some kernel of truth in this giant, you know, be afraid, be very afraid campaign that the NRA is apparently running nationally. I mean, here we've had just in a couple of minutes calls from Colorado and Maine saying that they've got that. So it is very interesting. Holly, thanks a lot for the call. Bill in Denver. Hey, Bill, what's up? Thanks for listening to AM 760.
I want to thank you. For so long, so many people have pussyfooted around this topic of fascism. They don't want to use the word, even though I think it's been staring us in the face for many years. It started out as a crawl, became a march, complete with jackboots, and now it looks like at least a very vocal segment of the population is in a dead-out sprint for the thing. The five conservative members of the Supreme Court, I've been calling them the Fascist Five for some time because of some of the idiotic decisions that they've been making. I think that I'm so pleased with someone of your stature just calling it what it is.
Yeah. Well, I think it's important if Alan West, if the machine on the right is going to start accusing progressives of being communists, that somebody say, okay, let's define terms here. Communists believe in an end to all private property. I mean, you read Karl Marx or Frederick Engels. I mean, this is not a secret, right? And those countries where communism was tried, you know, in full bore, full tilt boogie, the old Soviet Union, China, all private property was abolished. Everything was communal. Everything was owned by the government. That's communism. So if Alan West is going to, you know, claim that the progressives are somehow communists, then I think it's entirely reasonable to point out that people like Alan West, who want actually to bring and do bring business interests into the process of governing, are pursuing a path that traditionally has been called fascism. And I don't think that it's hyperbolic to say that, actually. I think his communist claim is hyperbole, but I don't think that calling him a fascist is.
For a long time, conservatives have been using this language, and particularly conservatives that are not on the air, but you even hear it on the air. The word socialist is used regularly.
Oh, sure.
Communist, maybe not quite so much, but pretty often.
Well, and the word socialist is very loaded in the United States because everybody knew that the old Soviet Union was the Union of Soviet Socialist Republics, the USSR. And therefore, people tend to equate socialist with communist, and Obama has been called a socialist by such, and not just Obama, but by such a broad spectrum of the Republican Party. And now you've got Alan West using the word communist. He's amped it up even further. Bill, thank you for the call. Randy in Seattle. Hey, Randy, what's up?
Hi, Tom. I just wanted to ask what you're thinking about the both sides of the aisle really supporting socialism. It goes back to Clinton repealing Glass-Steagall and also Obama signing NDAA. Don't you think that's fascism also?
Well, I think I think that repealing the Glass-Steagall, for those people who don't know what we're talking about, Glass-Steagall was the law that said that if you're a bank, you have to choose. Are you going to be the kind of bank that takes investment money and gambles in the stock market and things with your own money and with your investors' money? Or are you going to be the kind of bank where people can have a checking account and a savings account and that might write mortgages? By ending Glass-Steagall, banks were able to do all of the above, and that happened in 99 or 2000.
It led to the economic collapse.
Right, it brought us right to the crash.
Right.
I would not say that's fascism. I'd say that's deregulation. The process, though, of the banks going to legislators, and Phil Graham was the lead guy, and his wife Wendy was on the board of Enron at the time, and Enron was the one that wanted this to happen because they owned a bunch of banks. And they, you know, and they also got the commodity futures loophole, you know, the Enron loophole, so that they could trade it, which is now bringing us $5 a gallon gas or, you know, four and change.
Which is the unbridled capitalism.
Right. So you could argue that because that's corporations driving the political process, that it's on the edge of fascism. The NDAA, the president saying that, you know, it's possible to hold somebody as an enemy combatant, that goes beyond fascism. That's a very different thing. I think that's a...
What about killing American citizens without due process?
Yeah, agreed.
I'd call that fascism.
I would not call that fascism. I would call it really, really bad policy. That is not the merger of corporate and state interests. That is authoritarian government.
The Republicans and the Democrats are really the two sides of the same coin.
They're really not.
In the same direction.
They're really not. They're two sides of the same middle, which is the United States of America. But they're not two sides. Well, if you want to call the United States the same coin, I suppose you could say that. But I would say no. There are some very significant and important differences between the Republicans and the Democrats. And frankly, I think that this is highlighting it. So anyhow, up next, Taxmageddon. Speaking of differences between Republicans and Democrats, Joe Biden today coined the phrase the Romney rule. Yes, let the very rich keep their tax breaks and give them more tax breaks. We'll hear from a spokesperson for the very rich in just a few minutes. Be afraid. Be very afraid. Taxmageddon is coming.
You're listening to Tom Hartman. You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
So April 15th is coming, tax day, and it's the annual time for everybody to get hysterical about taxes. That said, Joe Biden today had something to say about the difference between the Buffett rule and the Romney rule. Here's what Vice President Biden had to say.
Look, the Buffett rule says no one making more than $1 million will pay a smaller share of their income taxes than middle-class families do. The Romney rule says that the very wealthy should keep every tax break and loophole they have and get additional new tax cuts every year that are worth more than what the average middle-class family makes in a year, in an entire year. The Romney rule says let's double down on the tax cuts for the wealthy.
So Curtis DeBay is with us with the Heritage Foundation, senior policy analyst on tax policy, heritage.org, of course, the website. And Curtis, welcome to the program.
Thanks for having me.
I see you're welcome. Thanks for joining us. I see this article, this issue brief that you guys put out. Taxmageddon, massive tax increase coming in 2013. Doc!
That's the appropriate response.
Yeah, okay. And what that is that the 39.6% tax bracket, top tax rate for very, very wealthy people, that gave us a balanced budget and started paying down the national debt under Bill Clinton, which got blown up by George W. Bush with the Bush tax cuts for the top 2%. That's going to go away, and so that 35% top tax rate we have right now is going to go up to 39.6%. Holy cow, it's going to raise $56 billion.
Well,
that's a terrible thing.
Is a much bigger issue than just the expiration of the Bush tax cuts and just the top rates going up for top earners. We're talking $500 billion in 1 year alone. The expiration of the Bush tax cuts, 60% of which are for middle and low income families, the expiration of the payroll tax cut, the expiration of the AMT tax.
So the payroll tax cut that was the Democratic proposal, you're in favor of that?
I'm just saying that when it expires, it will be a tax hike.
Okay. So any temporary tax cut when it expires is considered a tax hike by you guys.
Well, it was at one point temporary, but it's been extended for 2 years.
Well, the Bush tax cuts were temporary too.
No, they're not. 12 years is temporary.
10 years. It was 10 years. It was passed for, and then it was extended for another two.
Exactly. They've been in place for 12 years. They're not temporary. They were never intended to be temporary. They're not temporary.
Well, if they weren't
years.
Intended to be temporary, why weren't they passed as laws rather than as temporary resolutions?
You know the answer. You know the
answer is because it didn't require a supermajority in Congress to pass.
Well, that's how reconciliation works. It's how the Democrats got through Obamacare.
Right, and so it's temporary.
Is Obamacare temporary?
Well, Obamacare can be challenged in 10 years. It was done by budget resolution reconciliation.
Well, obviously neither
to be challenged
ever
right now.
No, neither were ever intended to be temporary. And once.
Okay, well, let's say it was never intended to be temporary. The immediate consequence of it was that George Bush added more to the federal deficit in his 8 years then if you exempted Ronald Reagan from the equation, every other president in American history from George Washington up till George W. Bush combined. That was the consequence of that. Well, and you want to keep that policy in place?
Okay, all I'm saying is that you're going all over the place with this. All I'm saying is that it's a tax hike. It's a major tax hike. The expiration of the Bush tax cuts, the expiration of the payroll
tax
cuts.
Maybe it's a good tax hike, Curtis.
There's no such thing. There's no such thing as a good tax hike. It just doesn't exist.
So if we find ourselves in a war, God forbid, well, actually, I guess we're in a couple of them right now. We shouldn't pay for that. We should just put it on the credit card and have our children pay for it, like George W. Bush did.
Plenty of revenue coming in the federal government to pay for spending at historical levels. Tax revenue will be right back to where it's been for the last 50 or 60 years once the economy fully recovers. We're spending 25% more than we have traditionally. We got spending back down to where it's been.
We're spending at rates like we were spending as a percentage of government, what you are seeing right now is the cost of government as a percentage of GDP is at rates that were back during the Eisenhower administration.
Well, they were too big then. I'm not sure. I don't know about your math, but I mean, we're at 25% of GDP. Historically, we've been at 20. That's a 25%.
22% of GDP right now.
No, we're above that. Or wherever Obama's budget is, it's 24% is where he wants to be. Okay. 24, actually, more than 24%.
Well, and you consider Canada a disaster.
I consider
Canada's 54%.
I think that we need to be back 20% for the federal government.
And you consider Norway a disaster, 58%.
Remember, you have to add on, you're looking at, when I say 20%, I'm talking just the federal government.
I'm talking about too.
States add on. When we add on the states, we're going 31, 32%.
You don't want to end the Bush tax cuts for millionaires and billionaires. You want to extend those and for the middle class. I'll give you that. And you also want to make sure that people like Mitt Romney, who paid 13.9% on over $20 million worth of income last year, that people like Mitt Romney are never going to pay more than 15% on capital gains income. So people like Paris Hilton and Mitt Romney, who earn their living sitting on their butts around the pool waiting for the dividend checks to come in, whether it's inherited in the case of Paris Hilton or the five Walton heirs, or whether it was the result of building a business like Mitt Romney did, that income is never taxed at the same rate of, say, somebody who's working as a teacher.
I'm actually less concerned about Paris Hilton and Mitt Romney than I am about new investment. When you raise the capital gains tax rate, when you raise the dividends tax rate, you're going to get less investment throughout the economy, which will mean lower economic growth and less job creation.
When Ronald Reagan set the capital gains rate at the exact same rate as the top personal income tax rate, saying that they should be the same, you think Reagan was crazy?
Again, I'm not exactly sure what you're referring to. But
I'm talking about 1983 when he raised the capital gains rate to 28%.
But he later, through tax reform, we got it down lower than that.
Yeah, Newt got it down, but it would have been over Reagan's objections.
Yeah, but remember, capital gains, I believe, were taxed at regular income tax rates up to
that's
point.
What I'm. No, they weren't. Capital gains rates go back to the 20s.
Okay, so dividends were the... Anyway, it doesn't matter. Reagan wasn't infallible. No one ever said that. Lower capital gains means more...
Really? Can I play that tape over and over again of you saying that?
Well, I mean... I don't know, Curtis. You try to always put that back on us, like Ronald Reagan, everything. He was a great president, great conservative president, but we've learned an awful lot about taxes, policy, and a lot about economics in the years since. And we know that keeping the capital gains tax rate as low as possible is the best thing for the economy.
So those periods of time in American history when the capital gains rate was closer to the ordinary income rate, when it was certainly higher than it is right now, like, for example, during the Clinton administration when it was 20%, right now it's 15%, the Clinton administration did not outperform in terms of investment the Bush administration. Is that what you're saying? Because the facts don't support that.
I'm not exactly sure what you're driving at here.
What I'm saying is that the tax rate on returns on investment do not influence people's willingness to invest. People will invest because they think they're going to make money. If they're going to pay 5% more on the money that they make, so be it. But they're going to make money. People are not going to stop investing simply because they're going to, they're going to make a little bit less.
That explanation is a misunderstanding of how it works. If you're an investor, you're going to demand a certain rate of return on the money you're putting up. What you do is you raise the hurdle rate for new investment. So if I'm an investor, if I'm Warren Buffett, I'd say I'm going to require a 10% return after tax return on the money I'm putting up. That means that you're shrinking the universe of when you
so you don't want to take it from 15 to 20% where it was during the Clinton administration. You don't want to take it from the current 15% up to Clinton's 20%. And you're saying that when it was at 28% during the Reagan administration, Warren Buffett must not have been investing. That was when he made a lot of money. That's when he really became the richest man in America.
Let me finish. What I'm saying is that you're raising the hurdle rate. There's going to be less total investment. Warren Buffett's still going to invest because he's still going to find places that will give him the return that he requires. But there's going to be other investment that got squeezed out because businesses simply cannot meet the rate of return that investors require.
So during the Reagan administration, we had a horrible economy that was falling apart. There was no capital formation.
Oh, there was plenty of capital formation, but we had major tax cuts. We went from 70 to 28%.
You had a 28% capital gains rate. Right now it's 15%. You don't want to raise it to 20%. I don't get it.
I want as much investment, as much job growth as I can get, and we can get more of it with a lower capital gains
rate.
The
way to do that is to put more money in the pockets of working people because they spend it all, which generates demand, which builds an economy.
Right, and that's the Keynesian logic that we've been seeing the last 3 years. How well has that worked out?
It's worked out pretty good. We went from 700,000 jobs a month being lost to jobs being made. With Curtis Dubay, Heritage.org. You can read all about it over there. Thank you, Curtis.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
We'll be back. Taxmageddon, is it coming? Should we worry? Do we need to build fallout shelters?
I'll show you just how cool scientists are. We study everything, that's why we're cool. And yes, most of us got high marks in school. And proud.
Well, I can't lay claim to the high marks in school part, but I love science. I'm a total science geek. And so this is our 2 minutes every week, our second hour of Thursday, when we can talk about science. Meningioma. It's a fancy word for brain cancer, a particular type of brain cancer. You wonder, you know, Ted Kennedy died of brain cancer. This new study has come out, published Tuesday in the American Cancer Society journal. The journal is called Cancer. And what they found was that people with meningioma, I'm quoting from an article by Jennifer LaRue Huggett, H-U-G-E-T, published over at the Checkup, the people with meningioma were more than twice as likely as people without that brain tumor to have had bite wing x-rays sometime in their life. Now, a bite wing x-ray is where they stick something in your mouth and you bite on it, you bite on a little tab, and then they shoot the x-ray through you. That those people people who had bite wing x-rays were twice as likely to have, or people who had cancers of the brain were twice as likely to have had bite-wing x-rays as people who didn't. They also found an association between Panorex x-rays, these are the ones where the x-ray machine kind of scans around your head and creates this panorama, and meningioma. If these x-rays were given before the person turned the age of 10, it increased the probability of meningioma by 4.9 times. That's 490%, which I would say is statistically significant. This was the lead author of the study, Elizabeth Klaus, a professor at the Yale School of Public Health. This is not something from a health food magazine. And they point out that this type of cancer can take 20 to 30 years to develop following the exposure. You wonder, you know, Ted Kennedy, having come from a very wealthy family where, you know, he's going to go into politics, and you wonder if as a kid he had crooked teeth and they just did a lot of x-rays and a lot of cosmetic dentistry to make his teeth perfect, and he ended up dying of brain cancer. It would be interesting to find out if there's an association between economic status in America and brain cancer, because people at the higher levels of economic status are more likely to have perfect teeth, which requires a bunch of x-rays. I mean, I'm just speculating. That part of it is just speculation, but the stats that I just shared with you are not speculation, and that's pretty damn scary stuff. I remember years ago taking my kids to the dentist and saying, do not give them x-rays. And he's like, oh, you got to have x-rays. We can't tell what's going on. Do not give them. And don't give me x-rays. Thank you very much. And this was back, you know, back in the 70s and 80s when I was corresponding with John Goffman, who I believe was the founder. He certainly was the head for a long time of the Union of Concerned Scientists. And he had published information suggesting that dental x-rays that there was an association between dental x-rays and cancers. So, anyhow, end of rant. Back to business and fascism and all the other topics of the day. Mr. Romney, Aram, am I pronouncing that right, in Grapevine, Texas?
Yeah, sure, yeah.
So what's up?
Well, I got so many points just listening.
Pick one, please.
The phone, you learn so much. But my first of all, Newt not only bounced the check, his campaign is like $4.5 million in deficit, and this guy wants to become a president to fix our budget deficit.
Well, it's totally consistent with conservative philosophy. Ronald Reagan not only he didn't bounce the check, he put it on our credit card, but Ronald Reagan ran up more debt than every president from George Washington and Jimmy Carter combined. Ronald Reagan ran up more debt in 8 years without even any significant wars or anything than we ran up fighting World War II. I mean,
we had a war of choice under Bush the W. They're Bush did wrong, and he increased our deficit of all the presidents some 200 years before him. Yeah. But that aside, we should be more concerned of becoming a fascist society than a communist society. Foremost, we are a religious-based society, so that's going to defeat communism to begin with. But big business has influenced our laws and our way of thinking going back to whenever I can think of. I can think of 1930s where the big businesses, the financial businesses, were trying to, stage a coup d'etat here in the United States to get rid of the FDR, and Fairchilds and likes of him were funding it. So,
Absolutely. Smedley Butler.
With this ruling on the Citizens United issue, we have now corporations which have no physical entity, no physical presence, can be having freedom of speech. Does that mean I can sue a corporation for their general budget for defamation now, which they don't let me do that?
They're super people, Aram. You're absolutely right. They are super people. Virginia in Portland. Virginia, thanks for listening to KPOJ. We got about a minute here before the break. What's
up? Tom Hartman, a couple weeks ago you gave me grief for what I had to say about Southerners being stuck pre-Civil War and that we shouldn't paint with a broad brush, and you were still saying, oh, no, don't call them this, don't call them that. And then I turned you on this morning and you're calling Republicans fascists.
I know. I changed. I opened it with a confession.
But Tom, here's why I think we shouldn't. I think the word is so highly charged.
Mm-hmm.
There are already a ton of right-wingers out there who think because Nazism was National Socialism, that's the same as the Democratic Socialists in Sweden, for crying out loud, or Bernie Sanders, because they don't get it. It's a level of sophistication they don't comprehend. I think we should never say the word Republican without saying the word corporate or corporatist.
Right.
It explains the same thing, but it explains it in a term that the Occupy movement has explained to the public. People get it.
Yeah, I generally agree with you, Virginia. And today was my day for hyperbole, or for pushing the boundaries, shall we say, for calling it out. But I generally agree with you, and probably I'll settle back down into calling them corporatists. I think that your language choice is very wise. We'll be right back. 27 minutes past the hour.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Call 866-987-THOM.
By the way, those clips from Mark O'Mara, Zimmerman's new lawyer, came from WKMG, local Channel 6 down in Florida.
The rich and poor pay their share, squeezing every penny. The rich and poor pay their share, workers won't have any. The rich and poor pay their share. Fair share's not their way. They don't care to bear their
own. I'd really rather not. Here's what the Vice President of the United States had to say today about the new Romney rule.
Look, the Buffett rule says no one making more than $1 million will pay a smaller share of their income taxes than middle-class families do. The Romney rule says that the very wealthy should keep every tax break and loophole they have and get additional new tax cuts every year that are worth more than what the average middle-class family makes in a year, in an entire year. The Romney rule says let's double down on the tax cuts for the wealthy.
Yeah, let's double down on the tax cuts for the wealthy. I've got, in the next hour of the program, I'm going to share with you some, you know, we'll step into the Wayback Machine for a moment. I want to share with you some clips that I hadn't heard before. Franklin Roosevelt talking about taxes, given the Taxmageddon is coming. Look out. And also, this whole Romney care, was it yesterday was the anniversary or is it today? I mixed them up. I believe it was yesterday was the anniversary. Perhaps it's today. And in any case, it was an anniversary or is an anniversary that is not being much honored by Romney care in Massachusetts. And clip number one, here is the guy who at MIT who helped design Romney care and then Obamacare.
I want to thank the many people who were critical to crafting the bold health care initiative that I'm about to sign.
That's Romney.
Jonathan Gruber at MIT.
I helped Governor Romney develop his health care reform, or Romney care, before going down to Washington to help President Obama develop his national version of that law.
And clip number two here, Mitt Romney said, we should do this for the whole nation.
He believed what we were doing in Massachusetts could be a good national model.
Massachusetts is a model for getting everybody insured. The right way to proceed is to reform health care. That we can do as we did it in Massachusetts.
Right, but then all of a sudden he's running for president as a Republican, and you got to hate anything that the Democrats did, even though it was thought up by the Heritage Foundation. Here's Romney, clip number three, going nuts on this.
Then all of a sudden, Mitt Romney started attacking basically what he'd done.
If I were president, day one, I will take action to repeal Obamacare.
He passed Obamacare. I'll repeal it.
I will repeal Obamacare, and I'll kill it dead on its first day.
Yeah, so here, clip number five. This is the Heritage Foundation. This is Dr. Robert Emmett Moffitt of the Heritage Foundation, one of the guys who originally proposed what became Romney Care and Obamacare. Here he is.
On behalf of my colleagues at the Heritage Foundation, just allow me to express our deep appreciation for your gracious invitation to be here today. But even more, we've been honored by your request. Myself and my colleague Ed Heiselmeyer, who's done a lot of the work on this bill, to participate in giving our best advice and our technical assistance in designing a new and different kind of health insurance market.
That was the guy from the Heritage Foundation speaking at the signing in Massachusetts with Governor Romney of Romney Care. In fact, here he is again, continuing just a little bit on this.
Nothing like it has ever been attempted anywhere else in the United States. So Massachusetts has raised the bar for every state in the union. And that's why the applause that you've given to your public officials here today is going to echo far beyond the hallowed halls of this historic place.
And finally, clip number four, there are some people who are saying, hey, wait a minute, Mitt, we live here in Massachusetts. We kind of like this. Why are you trashing this? I don't get it. What happened?
I was lucky enough to be the first person enrolled in the core health plan under Romney Care and was invited to the initiating ceremony with Governor Romney.
It's Madeline Renish.
Massachusetts health reform has allowed me to get my life back. I lost it, and now I'm getting it back again. And when I hear Governor Romney talking about repealing Obamacare, I just think he's jumping to a political position where the issue isn't health care, it's getting elected. And I think, don't you remember me? Don't you remember my story and all the other stories you heard? How can you attack this when you've heard all that? Don't we matter? Don't we matter?
Apparently not. After all, the Republicans are all about this let them die in the gutter thing, you know? Remember the debates? What do you do if this 30-year-old is laying, dying there in front of the ER? Let them die! Jason, in Winnipeg, Canada. Hey, Jason, somebody went off on socialist governments and provoked you to call?
Yeah, well, I don't know if you know or not, Tom, but Canada happens to be a, I would say, fairly socialized country.
About half your GDP is government spending, so I think that qualifies.
Yeah, I mean, you know, our banks are nationalized for all intents and purposes. You know, we have universal health care for all Canadians. No matter what, they just get born and you get it. And, you know, one thing about socialism, you can say whatever it is, whether it's good or bad. I happen to like living in Canada. We have all these programs. Maybe my taxes are higher than they would be down in the States. My wife and I gross income every year is, it's in about $160,000 total household income. So we're not rich by any stretch of the imagination, but we're not suffering either. We have a nice big home. We have two cars. We have two great kids that we put it through school and all that stuff. And you know what else? We have universal health care. We have all these great things, nationalized banks, low mortgage rates, and guess what else? We have a balanced budget every single year. So isn't that fantastic?
It is, and Canada did not experience the crash because your banks didn't go down in flames because they are so tightly regulated by your government. In fact, Canada...
Exactly. And you know what else, too, Tom? Can I make just one more observation about your political... and I watch American politics quite closely, only because it's very interesting to me, because Canadian politics is so boring. Nobody hates one another. American politics is funny, because you have all these billionaires giving away all this money to all these candidates to try to keep themselves from paying money that they would have otherwise paid if they were taxes. They're just paying it to people to try to get elected so that they don't have to give it to poor people.
Right.
I just find that funny.
Well,
you know, and I mean, so contrary to this Christian nation that they say that you guys were founded upon, you know, that's just crazy. So anyway, I just, an observation from a socialist, that you, Mr. Wherever you're from, should probably pick up a book and read something. And if you can hear that you live in, that'll be phenomenal.
Right. This is, you're responding to the caller from the last hour who said that everybody knows that the quality of life in socialist nations is horrible. And,
absolutely.
And
you know what? You know what else, too, is I've been around the United States quite a bit in my time, and most of Canada has great high-speed Internet access. You can't say the same thing about the United States.
That's true.
And we're a socialized country, so you should readjust and maybe etch-a-sketch your thinking there, you know, right-wing hack, and learn something, because we're not all bad. You know, socialism can work, and you know what? Universal health care is a good thing. I only wish that you guys would take that next step, because I've got family down in the States that I care for very much. And I'm a big fan of yours, Tom. I think you do a great job, and it's a pleasure and an honor to talk to you.
Thank you, Jason. Thank you very much for the call. Right. Thanks for listening to SiriusXM. Bethany in Chicago, listening to WCPT. Hey, Bethany, what's up?
Thank you for taking my call. I wanted to say to keep calling them fascists, because Alec helped lobby for the show me your paper laws, and the Republicans have pushed it through. So I think that works. And there was a border militia killing in Arizona on Sunday that hasn't been reported on CNN, and I'd like to see that in the news.
Okay, great. Thank you very much, Bethany, for the call. I appreciate it. Great to hear from you. Sherry in Redding, California. Hey, Sherry, what's up?
Hey there, I agree with that Canadian caller, 100%. I'm ready to go to Canada.
There you go. But you wanted to talk about dental x-rays.
Yes, I do. I was in dentistry for years, since 1969 was my first job. I used to have to put the lead apron on the person and go behind the wall that had lead in it to keep us from getting exposed. And at that time, I'd say the x-rays were probably very scary for people, as they were for me working in an office as such. Over the time, technology, of course, has changed. The exposure is way low. And if this were the case, that this brain tumor is caused from these x-rays, I did read the article. It was prior, back probably in the 60s, 50s, 70s, when they were doing this. But over time, the exposure has gone way low.
Yep.
And I can tell you, if this is the case, there are a lot of people running around with brain tumors, because we always did a full mouth x-ray, which consisted of 16 to 17 x-rays, 18 x-rays on a person, single PAs, they call them. And bite wings every 6 months when they come in, two bite wings on a child, four bite wings on an adult. And because the dentist can't see inside the teeth, he can do a visual exam.
No,
but he can't
I understand. But the fact of the matter is, Sherry, there is a lot of brain cancer.
There is.
Yeah, there is in the United
States. Is it falling on it?
I beg your pardon?
Is it falling? If that's the case, then there's
the rates are going up.
A bunch of people.
And they're going up, particularly among people who are over 50. And it appears that you're right. There was a lot more radiation back 30 years ago, and it does take 20 to 30 years for this to develop. But the other thing to remember is that there's no such thing as a safe minimum dose. So That's my concern. Sherry, thank you for the call.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Visit TomHartman.com for audio and video archives.
We'll be back in just a few minutes with Alan Ratner of the Talk Radio News Service. Check in on the news of the day. Stick around. Unbalanced. Welcome back to the Tom Hartman Program. Ellen Ratner with the Talk Radio News Service, brought to you by goatsfortheoldgoat.com. Welcome back, Ellen.
Well, thank you very much. So Santorum, apparently, Senator Santorum, admitted that part of the reason that he dropped out is he didn't have the money. He was on a family research.
His billionaire cut him off.
Right. Yeah, well, Tony Perkins, he admitted to that, and he said actually it wasn't just the billionaire that cut him off. He said that even that did not sustain the needs that his super PAC that they had the way they were burning money.
Right. So it was, let's see, Santorum's billionaire was Foster Freeze, who was a Wall Street guy, and then Gingrich's billionaire was the
Shelley Adelson,
who made his money with casinos in Hong Kong and Macau. It's weird how all this money gets laundered into Republican politics. I find it amazing.
What can I say? I wish some of it came in the other direction. Okay, Newt Gingrich today apparently met, or yesterday, sometime in the last 48 hours, apparently met with the Tea Party folks. Mm-hmm. And he has blamed his former employer, Fox News Channel, my employer as well, saying that they were too pro-Romney and that they were not fair to him.
Right, and the CNN was fairer to him, and then...
shocking is, you know, I just said to somebody, Fox, do you think the Newtster is going to come back? And this was like a couple of weeks, well, we don't know, but everybody thought, well, if he wants to come back, it's his for whatever. Who would shoot themselves in the foot like that?
Well, you might have overlooked this. When he did that interview, he had to take a break from that interview to do a hit on CNN. So maybe he's already cut a deal with CNN.
Oh, all right. That's a good,
I mean, they
possibility.
Had Spitzer, they had a Democrat.
Right,
why
yeah,
not
yeah.
have a Republican?
No, that's true. You're right. I could have overlooked it, 100%. Okay. So today, there is, of course, all this controversy about Hillary Rosen talking about Ann Romney staying at home and therefore not knowing enough about work and all that.
Yeah,
other kind of stuff.
I had not brought it up. See, you're filling in our listeners.
Oh, okay.
I figured right-wing talk radio would have it wall-to-wall. So
well, they do have it wall-to-wall, and apparently it's on the top of Drudge, although I haven't been to Drudge Report yet. Guess what Rosen said during an appearance on CNN? His wife has actually never worked a day in her life. Of course,
right.
She raised five kids. Da-da-da. Okay.
Right.
So then...
And what Hillary Rosen was really trying to say was not that raising children is not work, because she herself is the mother of twins. What she was trying to say was Ann Romney's husband has $250 million. It's a little easier to raise.
Well, she should have said that, I think.
Yeah, she should have.
Yes. Okay. But in any case, so then today at the White House, they're asked, Jay Carney is asked about that.
Right.
And he sort of talks about, he doesn't answer directly. He talks about Obama's record with women, which, of course, is far superior to Romney. There's no question about that. And then he's asked about the WAVES records, which are the records that tell who comes in and out of the White House. And apparently, since the Obama administration started, she's been in 35 times.
Hillary Rosen.
So Carney says, well, I know three people with the name of Hillary Rosen, so I can't really talk about that.
Really?
I don't really know. I mean... Honestly, the press corps, I was sitting there. We were in shock. I mean, it just was not a good answer.
That's like trying to dance away from a bad situation.
I know. So just say, you know, I don't watch the WAVE records. She's been in here 35 times. Yes, you know, she's a well-known Democratic person, and we've had her in for various events, and that's it.
Yeah.
I mean, even if she went to the gay event all 4 years or 3 years, that's four. And she went to the Christmas party, that's eight. I mean,
yeah.
In
other
it's
words,
not a lot.
It doesn't mean that she was in there telling the president what to do.
Exactly. I mean, and all you need to say is, you know, we've had these events, and she's been invited to many of them, and that's the end of it.
Right.
Shocking.
Yeah.
Or I'll get back to you, or something.
Yeah.
Anyway, okay, so that's on that. Well, the other thing that came up today at the press briefing today was this issue of why doesn't the president sign an executive order saying that federal contractors cannot discriminate based on gender, sexual orientation, GLBT. And basically, a reporter from the Washington Blade, the gay newspaper here in New York and Washington, said that Lyndon Johnson signed an executive order, 11246, in 1965, prohibiting discrimination based on race, creed, religion, you know, the standard stuff we used to, whatever. And the Obama people are saying, we want to treat this like don't ask, don't tell. We want to get it through Congress. Now, my guess is that if it doesn't get through and he's reelected, he will sign an executive order.
Yeah.
But I sort of understand wanting to get everybody on the team. And also, what he doesn't want to do is be accused at the three debates of saying, well, you just signed this executive order and you ignored Congress. I totally understand where he's at on that, but he's getting some pushback on it. But
yeah.
So that's on that front. Some other interesting things. PIRG, U.S. PIRG. It's a
public interest research group.
Exactly. They came out today, and they actually had Chris Van Hollen, who's the ranking member of the Budget Committee, with them. He wants to put in a bill called Stop Tax Haven Abuse, H.R. 2669.
I
guess it's already in there.
I mean, is this going to end Mitt's Cayman Islands
account? It might. But they came out, next week is tax week, or this week is tax week, I guess, and the average American would have to pay $426 and small businesses $2,116, which is we're a small business, to make up for lost revenues due to funds being transferred to offshore accounts.
Wow. So we're paying so that Mitt Romney can have his Cayman Islands account.
We are. And I wonder if he goes there to count his money.
Scrooge McDuck and his money bin.
Under a palm tree.
Yeah, now I have the picture in my mind.
Some mixed economic news. Trade deficit did drop sharply, 12.4% in February. That's really good news. Jobless claims went up 13,000, I think, last week. Let me stop. It's 13,000 last week. So that's not such great news, although it's not. You know, it's
nothing like when George Bush was president.
Nothing like George Bush.
700,000 jobs.
That's right. And mortgage rates also dropped last week, 3.87% for 30-year fixed and 3.11% for 15-year fixed. So, very good news on the mortgage front.
Yeah. Those are good rates if you can get them.
So let's see what else I have for you. Oh, just one, a couple other quick things. Korea. North Korea. So far, as we have not heard that they've done a launch, but of course they're threatening to. And the White House says, look, the ceasefire is not what we want in Syria, but it's better than no ceasefire at all.
When last I looked, which was several hours ago, it had not been broached. So far,
right,
so good.
But they have not pulled their tanks or their personnel out of the city.
Oh, my. Okay.
That's the problem.
Ellen Radner, goatsfortheoldgoat.com. With the Talk Radio News Service, talkradionews.com. Thank you, Ellen.
Thank you.
You're listening to Tom Hartman. You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
Amazing stuff going on here in the United States of America. The American Legislative Exchange Council, ALEC, you know, the Koch brothers funded thing where they pair up lobbyists one-to-one with Republican members of state legislatures, and everybody has an equal vote. The lobbyists pay up to $100,000 to be there. The Republican members pay up to $100 to be there, $50, fairly small amounts. The state of Virginia paid over $200,000 to send its Republicans to go to these ALEC meetings where they sat with lobbyists one-on-one and came up with laws that made the lobbyists happy and got the Republicans presumably some nice campaign contributions. And the former chair of ALEC, national board member of ALEC, the 2009 national chairman, who is the speaker of the Virginia House, his name is William Howell, he's a Republican, was confronted by a woman who had Anna Scholl, who is the executive director of a group, Progress VA, Progress Virginia. And on their website, they had pointed out that the state had spent $230,000 sending money to ALEC. So she comes up to him and she says, just wanted to, you know, you said that my report is inaccurate. I want you to tell me what part was inaccurate. And he says, well, while we did spend $230,000 sending people to ALEC meetings, we spent over $2 million sending people to other meetings. And she says, so what part of what we said was inaccurate? Because we said you spent $230,000 sending your legislators to ALEC meetings. And his response was this.
I guess I'm not speaking a little enough words for you to understand what I'm trying to tell you.
I'm a smart girl, actually. I went to the University of Virginia. I benefited from public education in Virginia. I think words with multiple syllables would be just fine for me.
He says, I think I'm not speaking in small enough words for you to understand. Listen to this one more time. This is how the national board chair, the former national board chair of ALEC and the speaker of the Virginia House of Representatives responds to a female reporter when questioned about ALEC.
I guess I'm not speaking in little enough words for you to understand.
Brilliant. Okay, as I mentioned, as we talked with the fellow from the Heritage Foundation, Curtis, in the last hour, we are in the week, and Ellen Ratner, in fact, mentioned in the last hour, we are in the week, or week and a day or so, that leads right into tax season. And so let's talk about taxes for a moment. What are taxes, after all? And when you get right down to it, Article 1, Section 8 of the Constitution explicitly gives Congress the right to raise taxes, to impose taxes on the populace. And the income tax itself required a constitutional amendment. That's there. I believe it's the 13th Amendment. And here we have, or maybe it was 1913, it's not the 13th Amendment, but whatever. It's one of the amendments to the Constitution. And so here we have this power to tax. Why? Here's what Franklin Roosevelt had to say about this back in October 21st, 1936.
Taxes, after all, are the dues that we pay for the privilege of membership in an organized society. And as society becomes more civilized, government is called on to assume more obligations to its citizens. The privileges of membership in a civilized society have vastly increased in modern times. But I am afraid we have many who still do not recognize their advantages and want to avoid paying their dues.
And, yeah, what was true in 36 is true today. We've got people who don't want to pay their dues for civil society, and they're doing everything they can to avoid it. And when you're worth $50 billion, it almost seems like something's a little off, that you're going to fight so hard to keep paying less than, well, I shouldn't say, I don't know what the tax rate is for the Koch brothers. We do know Mitt Romney's tax rate, 13.9% on $20 million, more or less. 13.9%, so, which is less than a teacher pays. Franklin Roosevelt had something to say about that, that basically the more you make in our society, the more heavily you're using the commons, the more heavily you're using the workforce, the educated workforce paid for by we the people, the more heavily you're using the structural commons, the court system, the banking system, the road, fill in the blanks, all those things. There is no way to make money in the United States without using the common infrastructure that we all have. You can't make money just sitting all alone in a locked room and saying, I don't need anybody to do anything. And the minute you hire somebody, you're taking advantage of that public school education that that person got and all the other things that brought that person to the point where they could be an employee of yours. So here's what FDR had to say about that. Clip 16.
There has been a vast majority of citizens who believe that the benefits of democracy should be extended and who are willing to pay their fair share to extend them. And on the other hand, there has been a small but powerful group which has fought the extension of these benefits because it did not want to pay a fair share of their cost.
And clip number 17, Jacob. Apropos of what I was just riffing about.
Taxes shall be levied according to ability to pay. That is the only American principle.
There you go. And clip 18, I thought this was fascinating, about putting wars on credit cards and paying them off. And he's referring now to World War One, which was, I don't get it why Democrats are called not strong on defense. You know, George McGovern was shot down, you know, flew 35 combat missions, was highly decorated for having been shot down. His plane went down. He had hydraulic failure. He had over 100 bullets through the bomber that he was flying. He saved his crew. I mean, it's amazing. He was running against Richard Nixon, who never saw combat. It was a clerk in the Army. And as McGovern pointed out later, and it was a Democratic president who won World War II. It was a Democratic president who won World War I. Here's what Franklin Roosevelt had to say about that and taxes.
We fought the World War, and it cost us $25 billion in 3 years to win it. We borrowed to fight that war. A Democratic administration provided sufficient taxes to pay off the entire war debt within 10 or 15 years. Those taxes in the war days had been levied according to ability to pay. But the succeeding Republican administration did not believe in that principle, and there was a reason. They had political debt to those who sat at their elbows. To pay those political debts, they reduced the taxes of their friends in the higher bracket and left the national debt to be paid by later generations.
Yeah, exactly. What he's talking about is that in the election of 1920, this is, you know, a couple of years after World War One, and we were paying off the national debt, the top tax rate was at 91%. And in 1920, in the election of 20, the Republican, Harding, was elected in 21, March of 20, 1921, he was sworn in. And one of the first things he did was drop that top tax rate down to 25%. Which left us with a substantial national debt, led to a speculative bubble called the Roaring Twenties, and the crash referred to as the Republican Great Depression. It started in 1929 under Herbert Hoover. So it's like we need politicians who will just say it like it is, like Joe Biden did yesterday, or maybe it was today, about, you know, the Buffett plan is everybody, you know, anybody who's making over $1 million in 1 year, after they make that $1 million, they should pay at least a 30% income tax. The Romney plan is he wants to keep paying 13.9%.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
So what do we do about taxes in the United States? How do we bring about national fairness?
Doing just fine, even diamonds don't ask for.
Welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you. Catherine, listen down. Talk 1090 in Seattle. Hey, Catherine, what's up?
Well, I want to express my appreciation of you using the big fat F word, fascism.
Okay.
Getting the truth out there. We all needed that. I've been talking about it for years. And,
do you have a particular expertise in this area?
No. Well, in a sense, I'm an old English teacher from Los Angeles,
uh-huh.
And I like to speak the truth, and I like words to mean what they mean what they are supposed to mean.
Yes.
And I think that we have too much Orwellian discourse here.
Yes.
If your words don't mean what they are supposed to mean, it changes your perception, it changes your thinking, it twists thinking.
Yeah.
And it's not only that corporations are not people and money isn't speech. I don't think these are Republicans. I think they're subversives. They're knocking down the pillars of the state.
Well, my dad would have agreed with you, and I think David Frum. I mean, you know, there's a lot of good old-fashioned Republican conservatives who are quick to point out that today's Republican Party is made up of radicals, not conservatives. Conservatives say
Absolutely. Slow,
incremental change if you must change at all. That's basically what conservative means. And these guys are rapid change as fast as you can. Let's undo the New Deal. And that there's nothing conservative about that. That's radical to the point of revolutionary. Excellent point, Catherine. Thank you for calling, and thank you for listening to Talk 1090. Jim in Port Hampstead, Connecticut, listening on Sirius XM. Hey, Jim, what's up?
Hi, Tom. Just wanted to talk a little bit about fascism. I got the Sinclair Lewis quote on the tailgate of my new Ranger.
Oh, right. Okay. So what is it, the exact words?
Oh, dude, I'm not standing in front of my truck. I can't remember.
I'll bet somebody in the chat room had it. Let me see if I've... Anyhow, you keep talking while I'm looking.
Well, it's right on top of my Occupy sticker, which is right on top of my Alan Grayson sticker.
Uh-huh.
And as soon as I can hunt it down, I'm going to
Here's the quote.
Elizabeth
this Warren. This is from Sinclair Lewis, and thanks, tip of the hat to Sue Nethercutt, who pulled this out of our chat room. When fascism comes to America, it will be wrapped in the flag and carrying a cross.
Exactly. And speaking of fascism, which the connotation with fascism, that word is a nasty word, but when you practice reason and rational thought and go by the strict definition, that's what our country pretty much is right now. Plus, it's a totalitarian police state because 9/11 changed everything, including a good chunk of our constitutional rights, which no longer seem valid.
Yeah, I don't entirely disagree with you. I'm not ready to give up on this country yet, though, and I have considerable hope that we can walk back from it. Jim, thanks for the call, and that, you know, some good and positive stuff can happen, but it's not going to happen if these authoritarians, these Republicans, continue to control the House of Representatives, gain control of the Senate, or gain control of the White House in particular, because that will further stack the Supreme Court, at which point I would seriously, well, I don't know if I'd move to Canada, but I'd seriously be upset. Jay in Orlando. Hey, Jay, what's up?
Hey, Tom, how you doing?
Good.
Changing gears a little bit, I just want to talk about the psychology of the wealthy.
Jay, are you on a speakerphone? You're really faint and you sound far away.
I am in an odd area on the turnpike and also using headphones.
I see. Okay, so if you're driving, okay, don't change anything. So,
the psychology of the wealthy as far as how they view money and why they're doing the tax policies and lobbying like they do is part of their game to garner even more wealth. And then, you know, in addition to that, their psychology is in their businesses, in their life, they're not used to hearing no from people, so they run roughshod over people. And that's, I think that's why we have the situation that we're facing now with the Koch brothers and all those people that are trying to buy their way through things because they're so used to doing that in normal everyday life.
Yeah, I think that it's a manifestation of obsessive compulsive disorder where the object of their obsession is money and their compulsion is to do whatever it takes to get it, just like a person who has hand washing as their obsessive compulsion. They touch something, a doorknob or something, and they have to wash their hands. You know, they've got a trigger, and then they've got which triggers the obsession, and then they have the compulsion. And
right.
and I think that this is OCD. I think these people need to be on Prozac, you know, or be in therapy. Jay, thank you for the call. Excellent point. Mark Taylor Canfield in Seattle, you've got an update for us on the Occupy movement.
Yes, Tom, I do. Before I say that, I wanted to say fascism is a word, but authoritarianism and totalitarianism and dictators come from many different political persuasions.
Yes, sir.
But I wanted to throw out some information. I just got off a national conference call with some press and occupiers, and I can tell you the Occupy movement has taken on home foreclosures directly, including a hunger strike that's been going on in Petaluma, California, so I'd like people to check into that. There's actually a website. Actually, it's a blog spot called Occupy the No Justice Zone that mm-hmm. explains that. The other thing is that there's been a call out for a national convention on July 4th in Philadelphia for the Occupy movement. So I think that's interesting.
Mm-hmm.
But here in Seattle, we actually have a hearing today at 4:00. It's the Community College School District Board of Trustees meeting. And they have been trying to pass a whole new set of rules restricting protests on campuses in Seattle. I'm proud to say that during the first two public hearings, not one person spoke in favor of the new rules, including the ACLU, which is totally against it. So it looks like we've won round one of this battle for free speech in Seattle because the school district board has been forced now, because of the public outcry, to rescind about 3/4 of their proposal. Unfortunately,
that's great.
Unfortunately, the proposal that's left, Tom, is they're still trying to restrict the protests in terms of when it can happen, what time it can happen.
Right.
And then there's the whole issue of the no camping on campus.
Right.
So we're going to be there today at 4 o'clock for people in Seattle at the 1500 Harvard Avenue up on Capitol Hill, right next to the Seattle Central Community College at 4 p.m. Speak for freedom of speech. It's really important.
Okay. So, and it must be, what, 2:30, coming up on 2:30 there right now? Yes.
Yes.
Okay. Mark Taylor Canfield, thank you very much. Good luck, Mark. Keep up the good work and pass our greetings along to everybody.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Call 866-987-THOM.
Up next, the good, the bad, and the new vocabulary word, ugly. And your calls. Yep, that would be the good, the bad, and the very, very spagnacolously ugly. Brought to you by EdisonFactor.com. The good. The San Francisco City Council, the city's Board of Supervisors, voted unanimously Tuesday to call for a foreclosure moratorium in that city until federal and state protections against foreclosure fraud are established. Supervisor John Avalos, who introduced the resolution, said, "Every day, families, seniors, and children wake up with the fear of losing their homes through foreclosures." Earlier this year, an audit of foreclosures in San Francisco found that the majority of foreclosures had legal problems or suspicious documents associated with them. It's time cities and communities across America followed in San Francisco's footsteps and helped victims of predatory mortgage companies stay in their homes. The bad. Senator Dean Heller. Heller, a Republican, is one of the many Republicans in Congress blocking federal judicial nominees. You may remember a couple of weeks ago we told you how Senator Mitch McConnell was blocking a nominee just to get back at Senator Harry Reid. Well, Heller's rationale is even worse. He's blocking the nomination of Judge Alyssa Kadish because she would not misrepresent the law enough to benefit gun rights supporters like the NRA. Or to put it bluntly, Heller doesn't want a judge to actually do her job. Sorry, Dean, we have enough judges across America using their personal beliefs to help decide cases. We don't need any more. And the very, very ugly, Foster Freeze. Freeze, the billionaire conservative who single-handedly backed the Santorum campaign, made a joke last night about an assassination attempt on President Obama. During an interview on Fox Business, Freeze said, "There are things that haven't been hammered at all because Mitt and Rick and Mitt have been going at each other. Now that they've trained their barrels on President Obama, I hope his teleprompters are bulletproof." Right. So now Freeze is corrupting our democracy with his billions of dollars and making jokes about killing the President of the United States. Two things that are very, very ugly. Can you imagine if you or I made a joke like that, say, standing in line at an airport? Of course, billionaires don't stand in lines in airports. They have, you know, their own private transportation. Stuart in St. Petersburg, Florida. Hey, Stuart, it says you disagree with me. What's that?
I don't disagree with you a lot on the taxes, but I do want to say that the Buffett tax would not increase Warren Buffett's taxes. He doesn't make an income. His money comes from dividends. And if we don't, if it is truly going on income, the dividend part of it is taxed differently.
No, the Buffett rule that is being proposed, I may be wrong on this, but I'm quite sure I'm not. In particular, because this would hit Mitt Romney, who also makes most of his money in dividends. It says basically, if you have over $1 million in income from any source, whether it's dividends or whether it's ordinary income, you're going to pay a 30% tax rate after that first $1 million. So on your.
It did say that. Okay, because then you're double taxing them when they've already paid taxes on that, but that's a separate issue. But every economist...
You're not double taxing anybody, Stuart. You're not double taxing anybody.
Every economist has stated that the Buffett tax would not solve our problem.
Nobody said it would.
We have to curb our spending.
Oh, get off it. You know, I'm sorry. I have heard so much of this nonsense. I'm struggling not to use phrases that you can't say on the air. From so many Republicans for so long, I'm just, you know, I've run out of tolerance for it. We got to stop our spending. This was the strategy that Judah Witiski laid out for the Republican Party in 1976, and he said, here's what you do. When the Republicans have control, particularly of the White House, spend like drunken sailors. Run up as much debt as you can. So Ronald Reagan tripled our national debt, ran up almost a $3 trillion national debt, more than any president in history had. And then he was followed by George Herbert Walker Bush, who also added another $1.5 trillion to the debt. And then Bill Clinton comes into office, and then step two of Jude Winiski's two Santa Claus theory comes into effect, which is all the Republicans have to start screaming about, we can't have all this debt. You got to stop spending. Why? Because spending is how Democrats get to be Santa Claus. Spending, Social Security, we can't have that. That should be handed off to Wall Street. Medicare, we can't have that. You got to hand that off to the big insurance banksters. Food stamps? What? Poor people eat? No, let them die in the gutters. The only priority should be tax cuts for billionaires and this double taxation nonsense. I mean, come on, give me a break. I walk into a store and I buy something with my after-tax income. The store takes that money and they pay the clerk. Now, that money's already been taxed. It was taxed when I paid income taxes on it. And then the clerk pays income taxes on it, and the clerk walks into another store and buys something. And that store then pays that clerk, and now it's been triple taxed. Come on, give me a break. You don't get to have insane logic. This is insane logic that the Republican Party is pursuing by saying, well, a corporation paid tax on that income. So now if an individual takes that income, it's being double taxed. I'm sorry, that individual didn't pay that tax. The corporation did. They're different entities. Just ask the Supreme Court. The corporation is a person, the individual, well, they're a person too, but you know, the corporation is a super person. And no, nobody is saying that the Buffett rule is going to solve our problem. What it's going to do is it's going to reduce the amount of hot money out there for speculation and reduce the probability of a crash. Because frankly, it doesn't go anywhere near far enough because the president wants to set this at 30%. And what history shows us, and yes, you can go back and look at the entire 20th century and look at the top tax rates relative to stability in the fiscal markets. And what you will see is that when the top tax rate goes below 50%, that money is free. Money is cheap. And the people who have a lot of it are willing to gamble it, and they are willing to take big chances, and you get speculative bubbles as soon as you drop that tax rate. Harding came into office in 1920, dropped it from 91% down to 25%. What did you get? The roaring 20s and the crash in 1929. Franklin Roosevelt came into office, raised it back up to 91%. And what did you get? The stability. 50 years of stability, not a single bank crash. The first time in the history of the United States we had gone more than 15 years without a banking crisis. Literally the first time. From the George Washington administration until the Franklin Roosevelt administration, or until the Hoover administration, every single 15-year period, and typically 10, 12, 13 years, we had a major banking crisis, a major crash, a nationwide crash. Roosevelt raised the top tax rate to 91%, and from 1935 until Reagan came into office and in 83 dropped it down to 28%, and boom, within 3 years, you had the S&L crisis. And you had, and also 2 years later, you had the biggest drop in the stock market since 1929. Because he dropped the income tax rate. So all of a sudden, all this speculative money, everybody's playing now. It's monopoly money. So no, of course not. You're not going to get enough money with the Buffett rule to pay off the national debt. What you are going to do is you're going to stabilize the economy somewhat, but it shouldn't be 30%. It should be 50% or 60%. Take it back to 74%, the Richard Nixon level. Or I favor the Dwight Eisenhower level, 91%. It just boggles my mind that people not only are willing to call up and spout what is patent nonsense, but might actually be dumb enough to believe it. Just take a basic econ course, please. Steve in Ontario, Canada. Hey, Steve, what's up?
Hi, Tom. It's just something that came to my mind this past week with that Aussie Guillen situation in Miami, Florida. I mean, I've heard a lot of rhetoric over the years from different people in the U.S., as you said, some pretty nasty comments about presidents and everything else. But you have a gentleman who expresses his view when he's asked a question. He simply says that he has some admiration for Fidel Castro, and especially given the number of attempts on his life over the years, I think it's 638. And he's vilified. He's within an inch of losing his job. He's suspended a number of games by the National Baseball League in a supposed free country. I just find that absolutely amazing. And the only thing I've heard is really criticism about how could he be so stupid to make a comment like that.
Right. Well, you should have known that he lives in a country that is knee-jerk, reactionary, hysterical about things like Castro, especially down in Florida.
And especially something as complex as Castro's reign, which anybody that's done any reading on it knows that it's not as far from black and white. There's a lot to it. And yet you live in a country that's 70 miles away, but you're not supposed to hear both sides of the story.
Right.
We have, as you probably know, a lot of Canadians travel to Cuba to holiday.
Right.
In this
a big tourist
country, we're allowed to travel there.
Yeah. Yeah.
So-called socialist country that we keep hearing about.
Yeah.
And the feedback that they get from the Cuban people, who incidentally are, granted they have a lot of poverty, but they are very happy people and very polite people. Everybody that I've talked to that's ever been there says the same thing. And they do not have the same viewpoint of Fidel Castro as always espoused in America, that he's something shy of Hitler. It's a completely different viewpoint. And they're more upset with the United States of America wondering why Guantanamo Bay is in their homeland.
Yep.
Without their permission.
Yeah, in their backyard. Absolutely.
In their backyard. They, in fact, are not accepting any payments from the United States from it as a way to voice
as
that
a
we
protest.
Don't want to hear.
Steve, we're out of time. Thank you for calling, though, from Ontario, Canada, and thanks for listening to Sirius. We'll be
You're
back.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Visit TomHartman.com for audio and video archives.
45 minutes past the hour. Well, it's amazing how many rational Canadians are calling the program today to push back on the crazy America.
From the war against disorder, from the sirens night and day, from the fires of the homeless, from the ashes of decay, democracy is coming to the USA.
One can hope. Well, you know, we have some democracy here. We need more. Stephen in Taos, New Mexico. Hey, Stephen. Thanks for watching Free Speech TV. What's up?
Hi, Tom. Boy, great rant on speculative bubble economies.
Every now and then somebody just sets me off. I don't know whether I should apologize or congratulate myself. But
Well done.
Okay,
well done.
Thank you.
I mean, the very definition of insanity, doing the same thing over and over again, right?
Yeah.
Expecting different results. I just had to call because you're talking about both Chile and fascism today.
Yes.
I was in Chile in 1973 at the age of 20. And I watched the CIA, AT&T, and Pepsi Cola overthrow a democratically elected government.
Salvador Allende's government.
Yes, and I can't think of a better example of a fascist operation than that, as well as Mossadegh in Iran in 1952.
Right, and the guy that Saddam Hussein replaced that we helped overthrow.
Absolutely.
In Iraq.
Yeah. So we've had the specter of fascism, corporate and governmental interests combined, hanging over our heads for a lot of our history. And I think it's good that you're calling it what it is. The corporatism doesn't begin to address the issue.
Well, thank you. And when General Pinochet came in after they had done away with Mr. Allende, the first thing he did was privatize Social Security down there, and they're still trying to dig out of that one.
There you go.
So, yeah.
17 years of just abuse.
Yeah, and vanishing people and horrible things, and this is what you get with authoritarian governments. Stephen, thank you for the call, and thanks for watching Free Speech TV. Frank in Davidson, Oklahoma. Hey, Frank, what's up?
Hey, Tom, how are you?
Fine, thank you. What's up?
Well, that's good. I kind of had something, that I said to your screener there, that the Republicans don't want to pay taxes. Well, now none of us have a job to pay taxes.
Yeah. Well, and what that points out is that as Dwight Eisenhower demonstrated after World War II, and as Barack Obama demonstrated about 3 months into his new administration, the fastest way to stimulate the economy is to spend some money, is to put people back to work. And when you put people back to work, not only do you stimulate the economy, but those people start paying taxes, which is, you know, a net good thing, particularly if you're running in a deficit. So, excellent point, Frank. Thank you for calling and making it. I appreciate it. Bill in Laurel, Montana. Hey, Bill, what's up?
Hi, Tom.
Hey.
Hey, this, I'm sorry.
No, you're on the air. What's up?
I lost you. I got a solution for the Bush's tax cuts.
Mm-hmm.
Why don't you just, you know, it's only 3% we're talking about, 25 to 28, you know, that 3%.
35 to 39, actually, but yeah, 3 or 4%, yeah.
Thank you.
Yeah.
If we could get the rich, you know, trust but verify, Reagan said, correct?
Yeah.
But that was about ICBMs over in Russia, but, you know, let's just trust but verify these job creators.
Yes.
So create the jobs, and we'll let you keep your 3% or whatever, but you'll have to verify you're going to create the jobs.
Right. Well, that's the problem is, Bill, this is another one of those canards. They're hallucinating. People don't create jobs. People hire other people to do things, and in the United States, on average, first of all, the average wage in the United States, or the average earning, single person earning in the United States is around $26,000 a year. That's the median income in the United States. And then on top of that, the average worker in the United States produces for their employer somewhere between $380,000 and $420,000. So the only reason that anybody hires somebody is because that somebody is going to make them more money than it costs them. In other words, there's a net profit. For most small businesses, I'm sure it's much, much less than that. But, you know, for large businesses, it can be much, much more than that, and that's what it averages out to. So this whole idea that there are job creators is nonsense. The job creators are consumers, and by buying things, they're creating, you know, they're stimulating the economy. Thank you, Bill, for the call, and giving me a chance to riff on that. Robin in Lansing, Michigan, my hometown. Hey, Robin, what's up?
Hi. My husband was just telling me that there was something about the unemployment going up because of teachers. Well, here in Michigan, we're not allowed to claim unemployment because it's considered seasonal because I work for the school district.
Whoa. But, teachers can't get unemployment if they get laid off?
Well, I know I can't.
Wow. That's amazing.
It's a seasonal. It's considered a seasonal. And we also have the option of taking our pay through the whole year or, you know, just through the school year and then getting a second job and during the summertime. But something happened to my son today that sort of it really ticked me off with all that Rick Snyder's doing. This is part of it. He and quite a few people were fired from their positions over the phone today, and I took my son down to unemployment, and they told him, and he makes over the minimum wage, but he worked less than 40 hours, so he so they couldn't hire him permanently
right.
or give him the benefits.
Right.
But he did work. He did make $8.50 an hour. But they told him when he went in there that he had not earned enough time or earned enough money to claim unemployment. And I said, so this means that anybody that makes minimum wage does not get the chance to make unemployment or does not have a chance to earn unemployment benefits.
Right.
And he could not answer me. All these percentages of how many people that are laid off right now or how many people that are claiming unemployment is that those are bogus numbers because
there are
people that can't even
look at you six. Look at the number of, you know, discouraged and given up and unemployed and underemployed and everything. And, you know, it's arguably somewhere in the neighborhood north of 15% of our total labor force. It's startling. And you know, we don't have a good economy. 30 years of Reaganomics has hollowed out the core of the American economy. And the Republicans' suggestion, more Reaganomics. Robin, thank you for the call. And thanks for watching Free Speech TV there in Lansing. Coming up tomorrow, it's Friday. It'll be Brunch with Bernie. Senator Bernie Sanders is going to stop by for an hour and be taking your calls in our national town hall meeting. And don't forget, democracy begins when you participate, when you show up, when you get active. It's not a spectator sport. Tag, you're it. We'll see you tomorrow.
You've been listening to Tom Hartman. For audio and video archives, go to tomhartman.com.